Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. This is Marshall.
And I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Michael.
And I'm Cole.
Now, this time I didn't say this is your host, Marshall, because I think that's a little... you guys are just as much host as I am. Don't you think?
Thanks a lot.
You are.
Yeah. Hey, so we'll all say, hey.
I do all the third world quality editing and recording.
You think they're listening in the Middle East?
Yeah. You know, we actually do occasionally get someone listen to us in the Middle East.
Oh, cool.
According to the data I receive, which is interesting. I'd advise them to listen with some caution, perhaps wear some headphones if they're in a public area, because we don't always speak highly of religion.
No.
And Mike, we were just talking about this earlier. The Chiefs almost won today. They almost didn't lose. Which is a step in the right direction.
Yes.
I don't even know why I care. I am so disgusted with sports right now. Right now I got the Chiefs, the Royals, last place. The Kansas Jayhawks football. They aren't going to win a game the rest of the season. I just can't wait till basketball starts.
Okay, basketball just got a top 25 recruit in Perry Ellis. So.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, so the basketball future at KU looks as bright as ever. So that's something to praise Jesus about.
Exactly. Now, what position is – I'm sure most of our listeners are dying to hear us talk about KU basketball. But what position does he play?
I believe he's a power forward, but I'll have to check on
that. Okay, we are stacked in the bigs. We got a lot of – we need some more guards. That's where we're hurting. But anyway – we are going to be a very dominant team down low here in the future. Yeah. Robinson, Robinson might be a really good player.
He might go pro after this year.
I'm sure he will, but I think if he can stay out of foul trouble and keep his head in the game, he's going to be a pretty good player.
Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, our listeners aren't probably tuning in for that. Last week we attempted to, and I'm sure the three of you remember this. Last week we attempted to record a show and technical difficulties really, we just kept disconnecting to Skype over and over again. And I don't think it was Skype's fault. I think it was on my end. I think it was my wireless router. So this time I've just directly plugged my computer into the internet. So hopefully we don't have those issues.
You seem clearer.
Do I?
Yeah. I agree. Well,
yeah.
I'm not drunk this time. That could be part of it.
That could be part of it.
So, what was I saying? Cole, you got me off. You forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, I did manage to say some of that, so I'm probably going to tack what little I could save of the last show onto the end of this, so if people want to listen to what we had to say before we gave up in disgust, they can at the end of the show. So anyway, I just got back from, moving on, I just got back from an Herbalife conference, or Herbalife brainwashing session is how I would describe it.
I'm seeing red flags.
Oh yeah, we got invited to go because we thought we were going to be buying some vitamins and stuff, and turns out to be a 6-hour, of listening to people talk, and someone paid for us to get in there, and we felt like we couldn't leave. It was horrible. And a lot of very similar tactics to religion, religious indoctrination I witnessed there. I mean, there were... I can't describe it. You had to be there. It's just a lot of brainwashing techniques that I recognized.
Isn't religion, in particular evangelical fundamentalist religion, with its stress on winning others for the faith, in a way, isn't it just a big multi-level marketing scheme?
Yeah, it really is. And that's what they were doing. They were talking about how you can control other people. Bringing people in, what to say to control them. And it's like, wow. Or another thing is they really encourage that you go around putting flyers on cars. And they said, you know, you got to do at least 1,000 or you're wasting your time. And I said, fuck that. There is no way I'm going around putting flyers on cars.
I did that when I was a fundie. I loved it.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, those were the days. I was such a nutcase. I'm so ashamed.
Man, I have to say, I got some flyers on my car for a Hell House a couple years ago that I was like, and I work in the printing industry, and I was looking at this flyer going, this is a really expensive flyer. Somebody spent a lot of money on this. I almost felt bad throwing it away.
I kind of want to go to a Hell House, but I really dread the thought of donating money to someone crazy enough to do one.
I have an uncle that's very religious, and he's a preacher. He's retired from TWA, and he's sold this herbal stuff forever. He put a lot of distance between family members pushing this on everyone.
Yeah.
I don't doubt.
Well, you know, one thing I can tell you is if you go to a concert, you know, the best way to determine if an organization is a pyramid scheme or not is how many times they tell you they're not a pyramid scheme during the conference.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty,
if you find them repeating that over and over again, that's a red flag.
Yeah, you know, Cole, you touched upon something that I think is really important. I mean, I've run into these multi-level marketing people before. They'll come up to me and, you know, they'll give, for whatever reason, they'll give the impression, they'll try and find something that they have in common with me. And then, you know, for before long, I think, oh, well, now I'm developing a friendship with this person. Then over time, it comes out, they're trying to sell me on something. And then when I tell them I'm not interested, they're done with me. And how often we see that with religious people who are desperate to proselytize for their faith. They're so focused on winning you over to Christ or to whoever. But when you reject, it's like they want nothing more to do with you. I mean, you're looked at as a soul. You're looked at as someone to have conquest over, and when they're not going to win, goodbye, fuck you. That's
right, right. And you know, this particular uncle I was very close to. You know, a lot of my uncles growing up, they lived with us, moving in from different states. But this guy, he would do the same thing. Oh, you know, I'm scuba diving. He'd be talking about this or talking about that. And I told him one day, and I was in high school, and I told him and his wife, my aunt, that I'm not interested in religion and I'm not interested in your vitamins, so just knock it off. And they never bugged me, but they bugged other people.
Yeah, good for you.
Yep.
It reminds me of a film that I saw. I don't know if anybody else has seen it. It's called The Big Kahuna.
Uh huh.
It kind of reminds me of that because there's the whole, you have the three characters at different points in their life, and the young guy is the one who's, you know, the religious guy, and they kind of tell him, you're selling God. And he's like, I'm not selling God. And they're like, yes, you are.
Yes, sure.
It's a really good movie. I recommend it if anybody has, if, you know.
Good.
During this conference I went to, one of the, what you had mentioned, Mike, is something they did quite a bit, is they told you, you know, try to seek out something that you can talk to the person about, that will allow you, you know, to get your foot in the door. You know, if you see them, if they have a dog with them, talk about how much you love dogs and blah, 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 and that kind of stuff. And then eventually transition it into, you know, hey, I don't know how you do this with politely, but transition it into something about diet pills or something like that.
Gosh.
Speaking of dogs, have you ever thought about going on a diet? You know, there's really no good way to transition to a discussion about diets with a complete stranger. But that's one of the things they do. And, you know, as far as I know, their products are perfectly legitimate. And actually, we ended up buying some, and I hope they're fine. But I was just really disturbed by the literal brainwashing that was going on and some of the bizarre subservient behavior that I saw from some of the people there. I mean, it almost reminded me of people speaking in tongues at some point.
You know, in our group, the Midwest Skeptic Society, we have a member that owns a health food store.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked on that. And so he said, you know, he doubt very seriously he'd be selling anything to anyone in our group because he worked in Missouri, and we have the group Midwest Skeptics in Kansas. And he was telling us that most of the vitamins he sells in the whole store doesn't do any good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, the ones that he pushed and not pushed, but said that were good for you was fish oil,
mm-hmm,
and garlic.
Oh, yeah.
And a multiple vitamin a day because of, you know, vegetables being so different now than 30, 40 years ago. And there was one other, and I can't recall it now, but there was only like four that he recommended that really did you a lot of good.
Yeah. And I've heard, you know, they've got all this stuff that you just know it's just hooey.
I was big in sports when I was young, and I've been through all that crap.
I've actually heard that you really shouldn't take any vitamin supplements until you talk to your doctor, and that there's really that most vitamin supplements don't help you unless you actually are deficient.
Right.
That you get most of it from your diet.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Unless you like live on candy bars or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now you can on Snickers.
True. Yeah. They have peanuts and
they have it all.
They've got the caramel food group covered, chocolate food group.
Mm-hmm. Peanuts.
The nougat.
You gotta love nougat. So
what is nougat?
I don't know. It just sounds delicious.
Uh-huh.
You know, whatever it is. So, all right. Well, Herbalife was fun. 6 hours of talking about how to sell vitamins. When you just thought
you just couldn't wait to get on this show, could you?
I just wanted to say, I just want my vitamin C. Please let me leave. But that was fun. And you know, that's really it for the big exciting events in my life right now. I went to an Herbalife concert, and that sums it up. But Cole, you had some interesting news, didn't you?
Oh yeah, about Reverend Johnson closing mm-hmm. the doors at his big church. He's meeting now at Olathe High School.
What's the name of the church?
What is the name of the church?
First Family Church.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So the church isn't closing, just they're closing their building and moving having their services at a high school.
Right. They owed $13 million. The bank agreed on $7
million. Wow.
They couldn't touch any of it. And so they – huge article last week in the Star. And Star had – they picked this up about 4 years ago. And that's how long it's been going on. And bank called in the note about 6 months ago.
Mm.
When I lived in the Kansas City area, I remember reading in, I believe, what was the Kansas City Star about some possible allegations of financial misconduct. That guy Johnston always came across as a very smooth, very slick, a used salesman, car salesman type of person, if you know what I mean.
He lived in a $500,000 house, maybe more. And his salary, the assistant reverend, his son, and I believe his wife were salaried close to $1 million a year.
Yeah, he has his whole family on staff. I mean, similar to the way politics are done up here in Cook County, Illinois. You know, you got one guy's chairman of the board. He hires his family. It's like it's no different.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, of course, it's a mega church, and it's got video and editing facility, everything. And guess who owns it? His son.
Oh, man.
it's pretty typical for these mega churches, from what I can tell. And I remember not too long ago, I checked out the website when it broke that they were having as much financial trouble as they apparently were. And they had addressed it on their website, on the front page of the website. And and one of the ministers or a deacon there said, you know, we've prayed about this harder than anything we've ever prayed about before. And I wanted to email him and say, you know, that might have been your problem.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe if you had spent a little less time praying and actually doing something to raise some money, you wouldn't have had as many issues.
Yeah. They were losing members. I mean,
nothing fails like prayer.
Right.
I mean, that's the FFRF thing, but it is so true.
It is. Yeah, looking back at my life, I realized the truth of that statement. There's no doubt about it.
That'd have to be one of the reasons why I stopped believing.
Well, I mean, they believe, well, God answers the prayers according to his will. Well, then that means it was God's will that this church, that you're conducting services in a high school gymnasium now. I mean, seriously?
Yep.
What goal did God have in mind when he came up with that plan?
God has a plan.
I'd be interested to know what they're paying, because they are paying the school for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm going to try to find out.
Yeah, they can do it in my basement if they pay me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where prayer never made sense to me. The whole, because, you know, so many people go, oh, well, you know, it's all in God's plan. And I'm like, well, if you pray, then, you know, it doesn't really matter, because if it's not in God's plan to help you, then what does it matter if you pray or not?
You know,
that's exactly
never
what
George, made any sense.
That's what George Carlin said, you know. Then
yeah.
Why the fuck pray?
But speaking of, I don't know if you're done with what you had to say about First Family, but speaking of Kansas City area mega churches, we have the famous First Baptist Church of Raytown, Missouri, right outside Kansas City. And I had been to this church when I lived in that area. I saw Christian snake oil salesman / apologist Hank Henegraaff speak there. But Paul Brooks, who was the pastor there, just recently resigned, I think the last month, for basically screwing the secretary. I think it was the secretary or someone on staff or another church member. But you know, all kinds of scandals. And I don't know. I guess, you know, these people claim they have the Holy Spirit living in them, and they claim to be so much better than the rest of us. Like, maybe the Holy Spirit is on vacation or just doesn't want to do his job. I don't know. But I don't.
If any of the listeners haven't listened to Hank Hanegraaff, Bot Radio, treat yourself for a couple of days. This guy is priceless.
But, you know, actually, the Bible does make it clear that the Holy Spirit gets horny every now and then.
Yeah.
Because he knocked up Mary.
Yeah, look what he got. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So they may really have had the Holy Spirit in them, you know. Holy Spirit likes secretaries.
It's always interesting to me how if someone gets a little bit, I'm not saying that there aren't people in, you know, that don't have powers of any kind that don't have affairs, but it just seems like there's a disproportionate amount of people in power who have affairs.
Yeah, well, part of that could be opportunity.
Like, that could be. That could be the opportunity, but.
Because not a lot of women throwing themselves at janitors and. Trash,
oh, you might be surprised.
I was gonna say, you never know. It depends on how hot you are, and
yeah,
no shit. How you wiggle that butt when you go down the hall, you know?
Working that mop. Nothing against janitors, by the way. You
nope.
Love them.
No, not at all.
Huh?
We here love them, and trash men. What would we do without them? We'd be screwed.
Yeah.
To haul our trash over to the dump.
They provide a valuable service, unlike Christian clergymen.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Christian clergy, yeah. Just I came close to becoming a Christian clergyman myself.
Same here.
God. I every now and then I think, God, my life would be so fucking easy if I had just done it. You know? Just work on Sundays. Come up with some stupid homily once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
I figured
women throwing themselves at you.
Yeah. Oh gosh, actually I'm glad I didn't. It would be a very boring life. So
okay. When we have time, I'll tell you when I wore a robe once during a job, but that's another story.
You work at a hardware store? What?
No, this was a long time ago.
Okay.
Another time.
Okay. Alright, so let's move on to the international news. I wanted to touch something briefly that happened a while ago, but I still wanted to talk about it. I assume everyone here heard about the Christian minister, Pastor Mike, who wanted to start an atheist registry.
Hear about that.
Because atheists, according to this guy, are comparable to convicted sex offenders, ex-cons, terrorist cells. Why would you have a terrorist cell registry? You know?
Yeah, how would you even go about that? Like, who's on that?
If you knew enough about them to put them on that registry, why don't you just go ahead and arrest them?
Yeah.
But hate groups like the KKK, skinheads, radical Islamists, and things like that. And a lot was made of this, and I assume that everyone here agrees that this is a horrible idea.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
For the same reason, it would be a horrible idea if atheists were to do a, put together a list of known Christians or known Scientologists or something like that. But a lot of people made a big deal about this, and I kind of found that somewhat interesting, as here I am making a big deal about it, because it really was just one person. And as far as I know, there are no other Christian advocated this his desire to do this.
I can see where the fear comes from, though, because if somebody were, if a bunch of people were to say, you know, even in passing, excuse me, if a bunch of Christians were to get together and just all of a sudden decide, hey, this sounds like a great idea, you know, it could set some really bad precedent. You know, I don't know. I mean, the whole idea is dumb because anybody says, I think that they were even saying, oh, no, it's not a threatening thing. Right. Right. That's not threatening to, you know, put a bunch of people on a list. And that's not to say that there aren't plenty of atheists out there that aren't happy to say, heck yeah, I'm an atheist. What are you going to do about it? But there are plenty of people who don't, you know, really want to advertise that.
Well, the whole purpose of this list was to alienate them.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is, you know, I can see why on that level, it's really troublesome to hear that because it's like, you know, somebody could get singled out and possibly hurt because of this, whether that be physically hurt or hurt because, you know, they run a business and people run them out of business because of it. You know, all those things. But I guess my other reaction is I'm really not all that surprised that somebody would come up with something as asinine as this.
But this thing isn't going to happen. This guy's a complete case. He's one of those. I think he's also one of those, as far as conservative fundamentalist Christians go, he's a King James only Baptist preacher, and those people are the nuts among nuts.
I actually
heard some atheists saying, good, let him do it, it'll save us the trouble and the money, he can make a list and then we'll know who each other are.
but this is for a nefarious purpose. I mean, it's for an audience who apparently finds, as I read before, atheists comparable to convicted sex offenders. but like Mike said, this obviously is not going to happen. They don't even. His name was. He was a Florida pastor, Michael Stahl. And of course, pastor doesn't mean anything. It could be him and his wife and the grandchild.
They can make a living room or somewhere.
Yeah, anymore. Just about anyone could be a pastor. I think half the country is the pastor of something right now, at least here in this area. So anyway, a lot was made of this, and I guess it's good that it be condemned, because if there isn't that voice of opposition, then people who did see this might have thought it was acceptable or unobjectionable. But I just wanted to address it briefly. Because I didn't think it was nearly as big of a story as someone was made it out to be. But anyway, enough of that. Another story. And by the way, I got that from theexaminer.com, although you can get this from a number of sources. I think PZ Meyer originally broke this story on his website, Ferengula, which is an excellent, excellent website. Now I get this next story from an unusual source. It's chortle.com. I think it's a UK United Kingdom website dedicated to comedians. But in this, there's an article by or written about a Frank Skinner, who's apparently a comedian over there in the UK, whom I've never heard of. Is anyone here familiar with a Frank Skinner?
No, I haven't heard of him.
All right, well, apparently he's arguing, and here's what he says. Here's what it says. In a conversation with the Archbishop of Canterbury last night, the Catholic comedian said that atheists we might see as people who like to deny global warming, or basically atheists are similar to global warming deniers. You might celebrate their right and defend their freedom of speech to deny global warming, but if they're wrong and millions of people have taken their view, then it could end in a terrible, terrible disaster for lots of people. So atheists are comparable to global warming or some variety of natural disaster. And well, go ahead, Mike.
No, I mean, as far as the subject of global warming, I can't offer any commentary. I'm very ignorant on that subject, so I'm not going to say anything one way or the other. But, yeah, to compare unbelievers and atheists in particular to people who deny natural disaster, I mean, the gist of it is this guy is trying to put unbelievers, atheists in particular, in a bad light. And I don't know, you said this guy's from the U.K.?
Yes. Well, this website's from the U.K.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, and he was speaking to the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Okay. Well, no, I find it kind of surprising because atheists are regarded a little in a more positive way, at least I thought, in the U.K. than they are here in the U.S.
Yeah, but you still have your a number of hardcore religious types over there as well.
Of course. Uh-huh.
But
that may be why he's saying this is because, you know, Britain is becoming more and more secular and less people in Britain are going to church. I don't know if that means that atheism is necessarily on the rise, but I know attendance in churches is down a lot in England.
Yes.
All over Europe, basically.
Yeah.
Well, churches are hurting so bad, they're deteriorating. I mean, they can't even keep them up. I mean, these are old buildings that need to be restored, but, you know, and maybe the atheists can move in.
But what he had to say, the comparison is that he makes between, you know, the dangers of global warming deniers and the dangers of God deniers, essentially, is just a variant of Pascal's wager. He's basically saying, you know, you guys are, if you atheists are right, who cares? If you're wrong, you're killing us all because you're converting people to your atheist viewpoint. But the same argument can be made against that as we often hear against the argument of Pascal's wager, in that, well, if the Muslims are right, then you Christians are right, doing the same thing, and vice versa.
Right.
I mean, according to everyone's going to hell according to someone's religion.
Right.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, most people of that particular religion think that their fellow religions are going to hell because they're inadequate.
Right. I mean,
Christianity.
Right.
Even within Christianity, you have different Christianities who think adherents of other Christianities are going to hell. I mean, the King James only Baptists are certain that Catholics are going to hell, and along with liberal Protestants, and, you know, and they're very conservative Catholics who think that only Catholics are those inside the Catholic Church are going to heaven. And so it's, you know, it's just Pascal's wager. I mean, we're just demonstrating why it's another illogical argument.
Well, yeah. How can you pretend to believe in God if God knows everything you're thinking?
Well, and I don't know.
Absolutely.
I think his main criticism is that not only do we not believe in God, but we're talking about it openly. And we're threatening, and he's trying to put us in the position of the bad guy. Because if you guys don't stop talking about this, God's going to torture us all. And it's like, well, even if that's correct, we're really not the bad guy in that scenario.
Not really. It's kind of like, who's now? I'm not the one actually doing the torturing here. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I've never heard of Frank Skinner, but I thought it was an interesting comparison worth talking about briefly. He's clearly not a very good comedian, because that was the least funny conversation I've ever heard.
Funny about that.
I know. Well, and you know one thing. To my experience, with very few exceptions, the best comedians really are non-believers or Jews.
Yeah.
You know, seriously. I could, a couple of Catholics here and there, and this guy is a Catholic. And the picture of him, you would never guess this guy had ever said a funny thing in his life if you look him up. I mean, he is about as straight-laced, and in this picture he's wearing a collared shirt with a tie. I could tell you for a fact, I do not want to see comedian if they're going to show up dressed like that. Because I just know right away, this guy is not going to be funny. This guy's going to get up there and try to teach math to us or something. So, all right, Frank Skinner, you suck. Okay, a couple of weeks ago, next story. A couple of weeks ago, Michelle Bachmann, who many pundits hope gets elected as the president, because she will keep us entertained for at least 4 years.
Oh, God help us.
Yes. You guys probably heard her comments about the HPV
right.
Vaccination.
Yep.
Where she not only, well, she implied that this particular vaccination, which Governor Rick Perry in 2007 had authorized the government of Texas to pay for, this vaccination called, oh gosh, well, the vaccination was paid for by the state of Texas for young girls in the state.
I think it's Gardasil. Is that what it is?
Yeah, Gardasil. Yeah, the Gardasil vaccination, which I guess makes you immune to the human papilloma virus.
At least the ones that cause the cervical cancer specifically. Yeah. I don't know that it protects you from all HPV, but it protects you from the ones that cause cervical cancer.
Mm-hmm. Which kills a lot of people, apparently. And we can all... I'm not going to get into whether or not Governor Rick Perry should have authorized the state of Texas to pay for that. That's a completely different matter. But she went on to say that, and I'll just quote her directly. I wish I could imitate her voice. There's a woman who came up crying to me tonight after the debate, Bachmann said after the debate that she had with the Republicans, where she had told Perry on stage that she was offended by his decision. She said her daughter was given the vaccine. She told me her daughter suffered mental retardation as a result of the vaccination.
And I call bullshit.
Yes, that conversation, she almost clearly made that up. For starters, there's no indication that anyone has ever been made mentally retarded because of this vaccination.
Right.
All studies, all research have indicated that that's not even possible. That there's no conceivable mechanism through which that could occur unless the needle were to pierce the brain of the person receiving the vaccination. Secondly, somebody offered Bachmann $10,000 if she could produce the individual who told her that.
Oh,
I didn't hear that.
Yes, and obviously she has not been able to do that.
Well, I wonder why.
Because she just made the shit up. Yeah. She just pulled it out of her ass right there on the stage, I think.
Yeah, I do recall I can't remember who exactly it was, but yeah, that there was a statement released right after she made that statement saying this vaccination is safe. It's been safe. Out of all the people, you know, all the people they've tested in, it's safe. And, you know, it's really, really frustrating because this is a vaccination for cancer. Mm-hmm. Not a vaccine. I mean, this is not even like just a vaccination for a virus. This is a vaccination for cancer. Mm. And mind you, boys should take this too. It shouldn't just be girls that take this. Men
exactly.
should be getting this vaccination as well, because men are just as capable of getting HPV as women are. And actually, I think I've read something where they were finding higher incidences of throat cancer in homosexual men.
Mm.
And they think that it may be linked to HPV, that specific strain of HPV. So, I mean, it's ridiculous to even, you know, my thing is even if it is true that someone who took this vaccination was unfortunately allergic to it or had a reaction to it, or she just got a bad, you know, batch of the vaccination, it doesn't mean that one person out of the millions that have used it should be a reason to stop administering it. I mean, you're going to have, unfortunately, people that have bad reactions to any vaccination.
Well, any medication.
Any medication, exactly.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you guys agree, though, with me that it's cases like this where the virtue of skepticism really is needed. I think of the quote from, I think it was Sagan, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. I mean, yeah. I remember I was in a debate with a Christian apologist who asked me, I may have told you this before, but he asked me, so are you skeptical of everything? And, you know, and he was trying to, the point he was trying to make was that you can't be skeptical of everything. And I agree, we can't be skeptical of everything. But when people are making implausible claims and unrealistic claims, you know, we need to be skeptical until there is sufficient evidence. And this is quite an implausible claim, and we are right to be skeptical until sufficient evidence of this claim is produced.
Yes. You know, believe it or not, you know, people were against, you know, religious groups were against polio shots.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, there still are people who are, who argue that that polio still never existed, actually, is one of the arguments I read.
Right.
Wow.
Jehovah's Witnesses are against blood transfusions.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as skepticism is concerned, we have to keep in mind that, you know, there is a difference between skepticism and cynicism.
Sure.
Skepticism just means that you're willing to review the evidence in a scientific manner. It doesn't mean that you always conclude that it was false.
Right, that's a very good point.
You know, when I first heard about the theory of evolution, I was very skeptical of it. In fact, I would say I was an old earth creationist for a period of my life. But I continued to review it, and I continued to think about it, and I continued to realize how sound the arguments for it were. And my skepticism eventually led me to conclude that evolution was true. Cynicism, on the other hand, is, that's just stupid. I'm not even going to think about it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. When you told me about the agnostic salvation hour, I was skeptical of it.
You and many others, my friend. No. But it's been a tremendous source of entertainment for me, at least.
Well, me too.
Yes. Well, we're the only two people who listen to it, Cole.
Oh, that's okay.
Hey, you said you've gotten a lot of downloads.
I do. I know. I'm just
that doesn't mean they're listening to it.
Well, yeah. Michael, you're kind of new. I don't think you know about Marshall's Lion.
Oh, okay.
Just kidding.
My sense of humor.
Sense of humor. I should have said that.
Yes. I wanted to this isn't really a news story, but I want to talk about this article I read not too long ago in this Jewish online magazine called, I can't even pronounce it, Algeminer. It's www.algeminer. And the article is called A Plea to Atheist, Pedophilia is Next on the Slippery Slope. Let us turn back before it's too late. And basically an argument. Well, it starts off, and I can't find the name of it. Some rabbi wrote this. Some very ignorant and stupid rabbi. First of all, started off by saying that the atheistic community is an amoral community. That we don't believe in morality. So right off the bat, there are actually some atheists who would agree with him on that. But nihilists, and I don't know what else you would call them.
Sure.
But they're a tiny minority of the overall. I don't personally know of any. Just I know they exist, but they're a tiny minority of the atheistic population.
I can think of plenty of people who have morals contrary to what, you know, a Christian would think is moral, but I wouldn't necessarily call them amoral because of that.
Yeah.
Well, this is where you get the discussion of ethics or morals.
Right.
Well, here's what he does. He does a lot of quote mining in here, and or taking an individual and extrapolating that one individual's view onto the entire atheistic community. For example, he takes an individual named Peter Singer. He's the atheistic professor of ethics at Princeton University. I'm not personally familiar with him, but he sounds kind of famous.
He has said some quotes, and maybe they've been taken out of context, but I have read some quotes by Singer over the years that have definitely left me scratching my head. Again, in fairness, though, we need to see what the context in which he's saying them. But
here are the examples provided. First of all, he quotes Singer as having said, "I don't have intrinsic moral taboos." Now, that statement right there does not mean he does not have morals.
Right.
There's a huge difference between being amoral and being in a position where you don't view morality as intrinsic. By intrinsic,
absolutely, yeah.
Intrinsic means that it's for something to be intrinsically immoral. It means by definition, it's immoral. And no atheist, I mean, who has the authority to define any action as immoral? The atheists that I know, and agnostic and deist, tend to believe that the consequences of an action are what determine its morality. That rape is wrong, rape is evil, but not because rape is wrong and evil, but because of the effects it has on the individual, the victim, the community, and such.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so when a person says they don't have intrinsic moral taboos, they are not saying they don't have morality or don't have morals. But of course, this individual, and I swear I can't find his name, doesn't go on to make that clear in this particular article, which is the best name for an article I've ever read in my life. That we're on the slippery slope to pedophilia.
Well, you know, a few things. This is coming from a man who claims to believe in the Old Testament of the Bible, which ordains genocide, murder of children, and sexual conquest. So is he trying to say that his holy book is a consistent and objective source of morality? Because if he is, he's wrong. And, I do, even though I'm a non-believer, I do believe that there are objective moral truths out there. I don't think their genocide is ever right. But, I don't think the Bible is the source of these objective moral truths, because it's not it's not a consistent source of morality. We see all kinds of things ordained by the God of all kinds of horrible things ordained by the God of the Bible.
Human sacrifice.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah.
I mean, Christianity is built upon human sacrifice. But no, I agree. I believe in objective morality in the same manner as which in which Sam Harris believes in it, in that there are some actions that are just objectively better than others in achieving a certain goal. If your goal is peace and harmony, then genocide is objectively not the way to go about it,
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, go on. That's what I was going to say.
No, I started reading a chapter. I got to finish it. And John Loftus, the latest book that John Loftus edited called The End of Christianity, mm-hmm. Richard Carrier wrote a chapter entitled Objective Morality Does Exist and Science Can Prove It. And, I don't want to I haven't read the whole chapter yet, so I don't want to, spend time explaining it. But, it was making a lot of sense. I mean, right now, I think it's a mystery where objective moralities or, excuse me, objective moral truths come from. But to say it comes from the Bible or the God of the Bible, that's an illogical statement.
What do you mean by objective moral truths? Or do you mean moral truths that are true regardless of the consequences? You mean?
Yeah, things that are always right, or things that are always wrong. I think genocide, I think we'd all agree genocide is always wrong.
Mm-hmm. But for a reason.
Sure.
Because there are individuals like Catholics who would say condom use is always wrong.
Right.
Which is an absolute absurdity.
I agree.
There just isn't. They can't really provide an intelligent explanation as to why. It's just ultimately because it's wrong. You can't do it. God will be mad. And that's what a lot of time, and that's ultimately what a lot of religious people mean by objective morality. That it's wrong because it's wrong.
Right.
You just don't do that.
Yeah, and Carrier makes a great point when he says that the reasons that religious people give for calling things wrong, they can't be scientifically proven. I mean, ultimately the reason is because God will be mad at you because that displeases God. You can't scientifically test that where, you know, you say, oh, genocide is wrong because you're causing destruction on others and you're hurting others. I mean, that probably can be scientifically proven. I think it's obvious that it can be.
Well, like I said, depending what your values are, if your values are peace and tranquility in the human species, then again, genocide is, by definition, the worst way to go about that, you know? And if your goal is a society, to live in a society where you're treated with peace and your rights are respected, then you're probably going to be in favor of just a general mandate against wanton violence. Because if you live in a society where indiscriminate violence is tolerated, then you're as likely to be the victim of that as the benefactor. And that's how I view morality.
You know, where I work, we're about split. About half people are non-religious, people that are religious. And the ones that are religious are in supportive of wars.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. And there have been studies.
Well, the evangelical fundamentalists community, Christian community in this country, they tend to be the most bloodthirsty, warmongering sons of bitches you'll ever know. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. It sounds extreme, but it's true.
Yeah, it is. True.
I mean, you've got Rick Perry bragging about how many people he's executed.
Or carrying his gun while he does his little jogging.
Which I think he made that up, actually.
Probably.
Probably.
Because he's got bodyguards. Anyway. But this article... A plea to atheist goes on to indicate that apparently Peter Singer, in a review of a book that advocated consensual bestiality, who the hell would take the time to write a book? Who I just can't. There are just not enough advocates for bestiality. I'm just going to take the time to them. He did indicate that if it were consensual, then it wouldn't be immoral. I disagree. I don't see how you could possibly gain the consent of an animal.
Well, I was going to say, that's the thing. Okay, you can't gain consent from an animal. Animals are incapable, as far as I know, of any meaningful communication, you know, in that regard. You know, we haven't cracked that code yet.
Yes. Yes. As far as I can tell, a lamb can go bah, and that can mean a wide variety of things.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Please stop what you're doing.
Right.
Last spring, I remember reading about some guy here in the Chicago. He was convicted of fondling a horse, and I was reading. I was reading the comments section under the article, and one of the comments said, "Now the question is, did the horse enjoy it? What did the horse?"
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, well, the interesting thing is because this guy is not singling out the author of that book, that he clearly wasn't an atheist.
Well, here I was going to say, that was my next question is, okay, so a guy wrote a book about bestiality. Does that mean he's actually atheist? I mean, you know, because he could, maybe he's not Christian, but he might be of another, you know, religious, belief, not necessarily, you know, atheist. I think that right there is just him reaching at straw, grabbing at straws.
Well, and he's attempting to, like I said earlier, to extrapolate the views of an individual atheist onto the entire community, which is absurd. But these type of articles are effective when read by the target audience, an audience of individuals who want to believe these type of things, who want to believe that belief in God is really the only thing holding us together as a society and keeping our children safe from rampant pedophilia and keeping our cats safe from molestation and wild, crazy sex, you know? And these, to that community, this is an effective argument. There's also, he also goes on to describe the works of an atheist who advocates, who did apparently advocate pedophilia, Joel Marx. And again, no. But again, if it's legitimate to take the views of a single individual and assume that that's true of every member of his community, then you can do exactly the same thing with Christians, with Jews, with Hindus. I mean, I guarantee you, you can find a Christian who advocated consensual pedophilia.
Well, how would this guy like it if, you know, as far as theists go, how would we like it if we assume that this guy believed as Pat Robertson does about divorcing your spouse with Alzheimer's? Right. You wouldn't like that.
No. So, and like you said, Mike, this is also a rabbi who clearly, Rabbi Averick, Averick. And he can be reached at his website at Rabbi Maverick .com. So you may want to email him that you don't necessarily agree with his predictions about the future of atheism. but yeah, if you're willing to just take a single individual and assume this about their entire community, you can do this with everyone. And again, he advocates a book. He endorses a book where far worse things are advocated than pedophilia and bestiality.
Well, and I would also argue that his information, what he's grabbing for, with the exception of maybe the professor, I mean, I've never heard of these other individuals that are promoting these. You know, ideas of consensual bestiality or pedophilia. So I guess my other thing is like, how far out are you really going on the fringes of things? You know, because I agree with you. I mean, we could go out on we don't have to go that far out on the fringes. That's what's sad of Christianity or Judaism or Islam or any of those to find wackos saying, you know, all kinds of weird things there too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
How many people are hitting on his site?
I don't know. I have no idea. We could ask him. But anyway, I just thought that was there was room for an interesting discussion here, just to indicate that this individual is crazy. I doubt very many people read this. My feeling is this is probably a website dedicated to a fringe group of the Jewish community. At least I hope so, because they're usually far more tolerant and open-minded than the views expressed in this article. And he does go on to indicate that without the Ten Commandments, obviously, we would just live in chaos. Because obviously, if the Ten Commandments didn't exist, how would we know not to murder?
Which list of Ten Commandments might he be referring to?
Yeah,
there's three, right?
I believe there's three, and there's more than ten. I mean, that's the thing that people always right. seem to forget, too, right. is there's more than Ten Commandments. It's not sure. like there were only ten.
Well, in one version of the Ten Commandments, it goes on to say that children will be held responsible for three generations for the sins of their father.
Yeah, I'm fucked.
Yeah. Oh, I am, too. Which yeah. nobody advocates now. But they never write that on the polite versions that you see at your local church or, unfortunately, in front of your courthouse or wherever you find them nowadays. So, all right, let's move on. Now, I'm hoping this will promote an interesting discussion because I've read something similar to this in a number of locations. I got this from theage.com, which I've never heard of before. But it's an article called actually, this was posted on Richard Dawkins' website, God's Truth, Believers Are Nicer. And it's an article about a survey that indicates that on every measurable scale, religious Americans are more generous, more altruistic, and more involved in civic life than their secular counterparts.
I don't believe that.
You know, I haven't actually taken the time. I'm trying to find out what...
You know, we've tried a lot of charity things in our groups, mm-hmm. and what I found is it was very hard to get people together on one charity. But after talking to people, almost everyone I know in our non-religious groups do something charitable
mm-hmm.
on their own.
Oh, yeah, and I've...
And it's not, you know, we don't go around bragging about it. I mean, right. I do things. There's not one in our groups I know that don't do something.
Mm-hmm. You know, could it be that the unbelieving community doesn't announce their charitable deeds?
Yeah, I that's what I was saying. I think that's
well,
it.
I'd like to know how this survey was collected, because I have read surveys such as we were having an email discussion back and forth because somebody was saying Ron Paul must not be a charitable guy, and he won like an award for, you know, his charity work a few years ago. He gave back his congressional salary for two years running because we're in a budget crisis. And so I was looking up, this was of course political, but there was articles saying conservatives are more charitable than Democrats, and it didn't just mean in monetary value. It meant like they actually did a survey where they did a survey someplace for at a blood bank
mm-hmm.
and asked the people that were donating blood what political affiliation, and I think it was something like. It wasn't like a huge group, but I want to say it was like 18 to 20% more were conservatives. So I mean, I kind of think it may actually be true that believers are they maybe it has to do with more presence. Maybe that's true, that it has to do with more people who are religious do tend to spout the fact that look, we're being charitable, but. I actually kind of have to agree that I think, you know, for whatever it's worth, that yes, they tend to be more altruistic and more, but well, maybe not now, actually, I take that back. Altruistic isn't the word for it. They tend to give more. I don't necessarily know that it's altruistic, though. I think that's the operative word there.
Yeah, and
well, I think they join together and do more together.
Yeah.
I think individually, I think from what I see, almost all of us do something.
Yeah.
Well, and
I've done it for years.
I actually saw that too. Actually, Americans in general, no matter what you believe, are very, very, very charitable yes. compared to a lot of other nations. Period.
Yeah. Well, and I have found that the survey was provided in a book called or in a publication called American Grace: How Religion Unites and Divides Us. It was written by a Robert Putnam, professor of public policy at Harvard, and by a David Campbell. Now, Putnam's non-religious and Campbell's a Mormon. So they have individuals on both sides. And, you know, a couple things. I agree with Jennifer to an extent, although I've seen various surveys indicating that progressives are more generous. I've seen a lot of surveys with different results. But I think it's probably true to an extent. But I think that there's a number of explanations for this. For starters, things that are true in the United States are not necessarily true in other countries. I've seen a bunch of statistics indicating that there are several European countries, not all of them, but several European countries that are far more secular and far less religious than the United States, but are also have the same amount of generosity or more than the United States, than the average American citizen, or donate as much of their salary, if not more, than America. Now, the United States does rank pretty high in overall generosity, but there are...
Yeah.
Far more secular nations that rank higher with far smaller Christian communities. So just because something is true in the United States does not mean it's true in England
right.
or
right.
Finland or Germany or France. And another thing that happens to be the case is non-believers are really, you know, we're not the mainstream in this country.
No.
We're the mainstream in Hollywood and in on the comedy circuits and things like that. But in the bulk of the United States, we are the outsiders.
Right.
We are, you know, in some areas, heavily disliked and discriminated against. So I think that has something to do with it. And also, we don't normally have communities where there are charitable opportunities present. You know, when I used to go to church, there was always an opportunity to donate some time to this or that.
Right,
or mission trips available. If you were, you know, had $200 to donate to it, you could go to a mission trip or something like that. That doesn't exist for us. You know, I would love to go on a mission trip.
Well, do any of you three do anything? I mean, charitable?
I haven't in a while, but I used to. You know, even when I wasn't, you know, religious.
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, I could do more. You know, I don't. You know, I don't want to announce my specific things I've done just because I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I don't be seen as charitable things. Look at me, but you know, I was just thinking back in the day when I was a believer. I donated monthly to Samaritan's Purse, which is Franklin Graham's organization, who is the son of Billy Graham, and Franklin has sure made his share of specific statements. But I look back at it now, I mean, that is almost, in a way, it's the worst kind of charity, because they are providing humanitarian aid for hurting people all over the world, but it's conditional. I mean, you have to, with this aid, you have to listen to the gospel. You know, they're making it conditional. Thankfully, and I'm so glad I have found this to be true, there are a number of organizations, secular humanitarian organizations, that do charitable deeds for people, give them food, whatever, and it's not contingent on them listening to a message about an imaginary friend in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, a buddy of mine and I, we called churches during Christmas. We called churches during different periods of time when they were looking for food drives and such. And we offered to go and pack up food and help in any way, and they would never get back with us. Because they knew we were atheists.
I've heard that a number of times.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another thing that happens is a lot of times if I'm going to Walmart, you know, there's always someone out there begging for money.
Sure.
Some charity.
Yeah.
If it's a secular charity, I'll donate. But usually it's a church group.
Right.
And I have trouble donating money to a church group. And whereas if I were still a Christian, I probably would have. So, you know, I do donate more. I haven't really donated much of my time recently, and I probably should get back to doing that more. But I do donate my money on a regular basis. But we don't, like I said, if you, in the same manner as a Christian would never want to donate money to a charity that was specifically non-religious, not just non-religious, but intentionally non-religious, I have trouble donating money to an organization that is intentionally or specifically religious. And most charities in this country happen to be, at least the ones that hang out in front of my local Walmart happen to be for a church or whatever. Or the Salvation Army. I have trouble donating to the Salvation Army because of some of their policies.
Yeah, and I don't have a lot of money to donate, so I try to donate time. And there again, I'm with Mike. I haven't donated as much as I could. But, you know, I do try to support local events and things like that, or try to, when I can, you know, contribute to food banks, or, you know, do something that even just promotes putting the issue out in front of people's eyes. I mean, because sometimes, you know, even if you can't donate money or a whole lot of time, if you can at least participate in something that brings the issue out to the public, that will get those people hopefully to bring in their money and their more people to volunteer time and things like that. I intend to, like I know this is small, but hey, every little bit helps. Like I have, this past spring I did a cleanup of the Swope Park the Blue River, and that was a lot of fun, and we got a lot done, and I was like, what a great event, you know. Once a year, I was like, this is a great event. That's, you know, maybe it's not much, but hey, you know.
Absolutely.
You know what I've realized since I've become a non-believer, and maybe our listeners will find this inspirational. I hope you do. But, you know, I obviously there aren't as many opportunities, at least as far as I can tell, to be charitable and to, to be charitable. But, you know, let's say maybe you don't have a lot of time or money to give. But, you know, we can all make an effort to perform random acts of kindness for those we know around us and those we don't know, even if it's something like, I don't know, if you're going through a toll booth, paying for the person behind you or paying for a person's meal going through the drive-thru. I mean, these are, I don't know. I mean, just.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
No, I was going to say, I don't know how they collected that survey, but I was going to say, I think for me, a lot of my charitable acts tend to be on a personal basis on a, you know, I know somebody needs some help with this or that or the other, whether it be something like, you know, I mean, it sounds trivial there again, but like they need help moving or they need a couple bucks to make it through to payday. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff, I think, is just as charitable as going out and helping somebody that you never met. You know, I think that's important, too, to point out that, you know, many of us may not be charitable like all the time in big, massive things, but it's the small things add up, too.
You know, if you see someone stuck on the side of the road, pulling over, see how you can help. So, you know, you don't have to. There are many ways to be charitable. It doesn't have to be directly giving money to a charity.
No.
Right.
Well, and
I give a lot of time to public schools. And, you know, there's lots of things. I mean, you can go to a public school and say, what can I do to help? They'll find something for you to do.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It really is.
Yeah, I'm actually going to maybe do that with a friend who works at a library, that she does a bunch of function with children, and sometimes she needs help just with the kids, you know, doing projects and stuff like that. So I was thinking I might go and do that a couple Saturdays a month or something.
There's a backpack for food for Fridays, you know, for the weekend for kids in lots of public schools. And if you can't afford to give food, you can go and help pack the bags, and you can talk to the kids. I did this for several years, and my daughter's a teacher in grade school, and so I help out lots of places.
Awesome.
That's cool.
Well, I wanted to go on to a little bit more about what this article has to say. A couple things it says is it really, there is your religion, it does say, or how conservative or liberal you are religiously had no impact upon how charitable or altruistic or nice you were or civil. It also indicated that people who were non-believers who attended church, and I know a couple people, non-believers, who do that, who either because of their spouse or just because they enjoy it. A lot of Episcopalians.
Sure. Episcopal Church.
Yeah, they are just as generous and charitable, even though they don't specifically believe in a God. So I think it has a lot more to do with that community aspect.
And the opportunities.
And the opportunities.
You're presented with way more opportunities if you attend a church than you are if you don't attend a church. It's sad to say that, but that's probably very true.
Yeah, yeah. I would have to agree with that. You know, we've experimented with this many times. I'm sure lots of atheist, agnostic groups have done the same thing. And it's just, it doesn't seem that atheist, agnostics seem to gather together to do one effort. But at the same time, my experience shows that, or has showed me that people do give in these groups.
Oh, yeah. A couple of people in our groups were going down at least once or twice a weekend over over the month for weekends, going down to Joplin and helping them clean up. I mean, lots of people that were doing a lot of different charitable efforts surrounding that specific event that were atheist or agnostic. Actually, I take that. I know three people that were doing charitable stuff surrounding that event, and I know that they do more. I know that's not the only thing they do, but you know.
And a lot of our groups, a lot of people in our groups, you know, they just let people know this is something they can do, and so just by putting it out on the group saying, hey, they need help in Joplin, and people go and they help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So anyway, this the ultimately this survey doesn't really produce any concrete results or indication as to whether or not atheism or non-belief, how it makes you behave or act towards others. But it does demonstrate somewhat clearly, if this survey is accurate, that living in a community where these opportunities are available do make a person on average more likely to be charitable, to donate money and their time to a cause. Which just makes sense, actually.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah. All right. Last article, last piece of news. And this is from the dailymail.com, which is another United Kingdom a news source. I don't know how... This is another one of those situations where it's not funny, but you almost want to laugh and hear it. Now, as most of our listeners are probably aware, and in case you're not, I'll just explain it to you. When I hear people describe a mundane, you know, medically caused recoveries from injuries as miracles, it just drives me crazy. Absolutely bonkers, because, you know, again, if someone gets injured and then receives medical attention, there's absolutely no reason to ascribe the recovery to the existence of a god. But anyway, right. In this particular article, it's about a Spanish man who a year ago was hit by a car and eventually made a full recovery. In celebration and to give thanks to the Virgin Mary for his recovery, because clearly, what other possible explanation for his recovery could there possibly be? The Virgin Mary stepped in.
Besides doctors, you mean?
Besides the doctors.
Okay.
And medical technology.
Yeah. Well, and as I've said in the past, I think that religious people nowadays have gotten over this notion of the biblical miracles where, bam, you're better.
Right.
You know, you're blind, bam, you can see. Wow, it's a miracle. Now they just view the effects of God as an enhancement to the medical technology that's available in their community. So they pray, they figure, well, if I pray, my medical, the care I receive will be 20 times or 20% more effective or whatever. Because they know they still have to receive the treatment.
What else can they say?
Yeah, no. Because if they honestly believed.
Well, if they honestly believed, never mind the fact that, you know, if they really believed that God loved them and didn't want them to be hurt, he wouldn't let them be hurt in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, the right. Car would never, of course, in that situation, he never gets thanked for a miracle because you don't know that God, the car that didn't hit you was a miracle. So I think God really, for his own ego, needs that person to get hit by the car.
But you know, when people start giving praise to God for being healed of something or through medical technology or whatever, you know, I think even Sam Harris has said this basically, and I agree. I mean, that in a way, that's the worst form of self-centeredness and arrogance, because you're claiming God loves you and over the other people who have had the same disease and died of it. I mean, where is God for those other people who had that same disease and died of it? And people say, oh, it's a miracle. Praise the Lord. Everyone, my son survived that plane crash in which everyone was killed. So
yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, this is the same thing as the chosen people.
Right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay, but I haven't read the entire story. So he goes on a pilgrimage. He's going to walk to a shrine, about a day's walk to the shrine of the Virgin Mary. Within 20 minutes of starting this pilgrimage, he gets hit by another car and dies instantly. Which is, I don't know.
Michael,
is that funny? I don't know if that's funny.
I will say I am sorry that the man died, but yeah, it's kind of funny. I'm not gonna lie.
There's a lesson in here. It's got to be use your sidewalks, people.
Right.
If you have a sidewalk, this guy got hit twice by a car. Most people go their entire life without being hit by a single car. God clearly was not looking out for this guy. And neither were the drivers.
Kind of reminds us of that story we talked about a while back of that priest who tried to walk on water and ended up drowning.
Yes. So I don't know. I just had to read this because it's like I said, we're bad people. Why we would find this funny is beyond me. But this notion, I'm going to guess that most people have decided that the original recovery probably wasn't a miracle after all. I don't know.
When you get down to it, you would have to think that most Christians don't believe that.
Well, like I said, if they honestly believed in divine intervention and the power of prayer, they would never make that call to 911 in the first place.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely. Everybody,
let's pray.
Yep.
You know.
First thing they do.
Actually, that reminds me of steering this another yet sad direction. I watched a documentary over the weekend about assisted suicide, and I thought that the guy made a really good point. And he said, you know, people, you know, especially, and I would say this applies to a lot of Christians, you know, when it comes to saving lives, because so many people say, oh, well, you know, but you could live, you can't commit suicide, you need to keep living, even though you have a debilitating disease that's going to make you suffer. But they're like, so what do you say to all those premature babies that are born? It's playing God, because they were basically saying you're playing God if you take your own life. And he was like, well, aren't we playing God when we save a baby's life when it's prematurely born?
Yeah,
and we
good
all
point.
Kinds of medical
right,
stuff.
That's not his plan. Yeah.
Aren't we saving, you know, someone from dying and playing God when they have a heart attack and we give them the angiogram or open heart surgery or any of those things?
Or I mean, antibiotics,
any type of medication for that matter. I mean, aren't we playing God at that point? So why shouldn't somebody terminally ill be able to, you know, decide whether or not they want to live?
Yeah. Why shouldn't a person terminally ill with no legitimate prospects of recovery have the right to determine how they're going to die and what's going to happen to their body?
And how cruel is if God is real, how cruel is God if he allows that person to live on in utter misery for that long?
Or if he not just allows it, but demands it.
Right.
You know, that's where the cruelty comes in. You know, he could suffer for a couple more days. I'm not ready for him. I mean,
a few years.
Yeah, I mean, how do you worship a God like that? That's what makes it so bizarre to me is people glorifying, you know, the great flood and things like that, and say, you know, if I were to believe in that God, I would have to believe him to be a total monster.
Well, and what's bizarre is believers will end up, not all of them, but many of them, they'll end up thanking God for illnesses. I remember Bob Price was talking about Rick Warren on his podcast, and you know, it is sad because I think she's okay, but Rick Warren's wife, I think, had breast cancer. And,
yeah, she did.
Rick Warren said, oh, this is a sign from God that we need to slow down. I mean, I don't explicitly thank God for this, but it's implicitly he's thanking God for sending his wife breast cancer. I mean, how perverted of a system, of a mindset is that?
Well, this notion that your God, his primary mode of communication is torture and illness.
I heard somebody say God won't send you anything.
Won't give you more than you can handle.
Yeah.
Which is total BS, by the way.
Yeah.
Ask the Jews in Auschwitz whether that was true or not. You know?
Yeah.
You might want to turn it down. This is a little bit more than I can handle, this gas chamber thing. Yeah, no, it's total bullshit. I hate it when I hear that statement, because they view that as a justification for the atrocities and the horrors that we see in daily life. They can handle it. Get over it. Stop your whining. And it's an insensitive statement that just drives me crazy because I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jennifer. You really brought me down with that one. No kidding. All right. Well, that's all I got, folks. That's
okay.
All we got. We've made fun of Christianity long enough today. All right, everyone. And for the family of that guy who got hit by the car, we're sorry.
Absolutely.
We really feel bad about that. And for those of you listening, it's good lesson. Like I said, stay on the sidewalk.
Look both ways when you're crossing the street.
Exactly. You do not need to be walking in the middle of the street. And I noticed it doesn't even give this guy's name, this article, which is probably for the best.
Kind of makes me wonder if that's if it's a little bit suspect, you know, because sometimes newspapers will actually publish stuff that's not been vetted.
Right.
But I've seen this in a couple of other locations, but but that could be true too. So sometimes,
yeah, because actually sometimes one newspaper will report it, so other newspapers think, oh well, they must have vetted it, so they'll pick it up too.
Sure.
Well, dang it, I want to believe that it's true.
We'll have to look and see if we can find it, because honestly, if there's no name, then I don't know that I believe that it's true.
Or, you know, just maybe in an effort to be sensitive to this poor guy, they opted not to mention the name.
We'll have to do some detective work between now and the next show.
Yes.
See if there's some police reports or something.
We will get to the bottom of this, people. You can rest assured.
I have fun.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, that's another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. Everyone, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Everyone, welcome to another show of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. I'm a little despondent right now. I've pretty much given up on sports as a fan of Kansas and the Chiefs right now.
Yeah.
My God, the Chiefs are horrible.
I think the combined score that they've lost their first two games is about 89-10.
Yes.
Ouch. What was the final score?
48-3.
Ouch.
Oh my gosh.
That's very rare in professional football to see a blowout like that. To the Lions, the team that
Lions are good. They might make the playoffs this year.
They might, but if they get to play the Chiefs every game, they will. That's for sure. But and then the Jayhawks got humiliated by Georgia Tech yesterday.
604 total rushing yards, which is a record. Both and then 768 total yards, which are both records for Georgia Tech. I mean, I think that defense can't stop. They can't stop anything.
No. So I'm despondent. It's been I've decided I don't even care about sports anymore. Being a sports fan has been like being married to Newt Gingrich. It's going to let you down when you need it the most. As you know, he left two wives. Well, I think one was in the hospital with cancer at the time when he divorced her. And anyway,
kind of following the advice that is similar to the. To what Pat Robertson just.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
About how that people with Alzheimer's were essentially dead, so it was okay to divorce them, which is just, you know, they were talking about this on the nonprofits, and I think I agreed with everything they said about it. If I were to develop Alzheimer's or dementia and just be completely oblivious to the world around me, I would be fine with my wife finding companionship elsewhere. But I don't
know. It's like you wouldn't know either way.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I mean, that's probably the majority of the reason why I wouldn't care. Right. But I would also want her to know that, you know, if I get to that point, feel free.
Okay.
most of the time when you I guess I can't say most of the time, but I think when you first are diagnosed with something like Alzheimer's, you're kind of still kind of with it anyway. And I would hope that most people would make some sort of plans, because I kind of agree with that. If I were married and had Alzheimer's, you know, that I would probably figure out something with the.
can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, Michael. Okay, I guess Michael went off.
Uh-oh.
Oh. Yeah. I see his. I see it beeping on him.
Oh, there he is.
Michael, you back? Hello? Oh, God. What the heck?
Satan.
I am getting so sick of Skype. I never have any problem with my internet connection except Skype. We're probably going to get sued by Skype.
You'll get a notice.
I can't even figure out how to contact him.
Recorded.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Mark.
Okay, I was just joking.
You got me. That was good. Yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, our audience is familiar with our tradition of Skype difficulties and audio foibles. So, yeah, it really wouldn't be an episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour without it. So, all right, where were we? We were talking about Alzheimer's and how Pat Robertson was fine with that.
You know, Hank Hanegraaff had a heyday on Bot Radio with Pat Robertson.
Recently?
Yeah. He was talking about, you know, Alzheimer's divorcing them and how terrible that was.
Well, yeah, and which it's in my opinion stupid to find that terrible.
Oh yeah, me too.
But at the time, if you're going to be consistent with this notion that a person with even any type of brain activity is still alive, then you're stuck. If you're
With your living will, I guess a couple should talk about that.
Well,
that's where but I agree, that's where the viewpoint is inconsistent, because he's saying, because, you know, a lot of Christians hold life is life is life. And I'm like, right. Well, if there's still a vet, you know, the same people who, these are the same, you know, this is the same guy who probably didn't want Terry Schiavo's, you know, feeding tube removed because, well, she's alive. She needs to be kept alive.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if that was his stance or not, but.
So it's inconsistent, but oddly, with as much scorn as he's receiving, I actually agreed with him on it. But I don't know how you would do a living will on that, you know.
Two things, though. The director of one of the meetup groups I go to, he made a Facebook post about it, and he said that it was either a post or a response to another post, but he said, you know, by Pat saying this, he's basically conceding that there really isn't a soul.
Yeah.
And And, you know, I know Pat a couple of months ago said that he implied on the show that marijuana should be legal. So, I don't know. This might be coming around in some areas. You never know.
Hey, it's not bad. I may
send him an
email.
He couldn't get worse. He couldn't get crazier. Right. And, you know, he was almost nominated for the Republican Party. The president. Remember that? What was it, in the 80s or something?
Yeah.
88
yeah.
or 84. I think it was 88.
He was a serious contender. And sure, he's an absolute lunatic.
Yeah,
and you know what? He hasn't. It's not that he's saying stupider things now than he did in the past. It's just that we pay more attention and we make a bigger deal about it when he does it now.
Yeah,
because I've seen some of his quotes from the past, and they are just some of the dumbest things you've ever heard. So this isn't new for him. But what is new is him saying things that I actually agree with.
Yeah. No, especially the marijuana part.
Yeah, well, and I'm a social libertarian. I'm, when it comes to drug use, with a few exceptions, I think that if a person's adult enough to pay taxes and fight in war, then they should be able to choose what they're going to put in their body.
I agree.
Drugs or sex.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, anyway, Pat Robertson is in, well, less of an idiot today than he was 2 weeks ago.
But tomorrow's coming, and I'm sure he'll say
something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he has a terminal case of foot and mouth disease. He'll say something else.
Although, with the recent natural disasters, with that minor earthquake out east and that hurricane that wasn't nearly as bad, he did not, to my knowledge, he did not blame that on homosexuality or big government like Michelle Bachmann did.
And he didn't have a conversation with Satan either, did he?
No, he didn't. So, anyway, maybe he's getting a little smarter. Gosh, what was I going to say? No, I didn't have anything. Jennifer, you had you went to an interesting event yesterday in Kansas City.
Yes. I don't know. Some of our listeners are probably aware of the fact that up in Canada there was a rape case in which the police officer told the victim if she didn't dress like a slut she wouldn't have been raped.
Mm-hmm.
So that sparked a lot of outrage in Toronto, obviously, and they started a bunch of protests. And they called them slut walks, which is basically a protest of, you know, basically it doesn't matter how you dress, it doesn't matter where you're at or how much you have to drink or any of that stuff. It's never okay. It's never, you're never complicit in a rape. Mm-hmm. It's never your fault that you got raped. It's the rapist's fault that they, you know, that they raped you. And so a lot of these protests have been going on across the country. And yesterday afternoon, we had our own in Kansas City, but and that started on the plaza and went to a little park right next to Nelson Atkins Art Museum. And had a great turnout. I'm not sure exactly. There were probably, I would say, at least 150 people there.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, a great amount of people. Lots of skin and cleavage.
Excellent.
Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah.
I'll have to post pictures. I
please do.
Wore a nice dress. Yeah.
Especially the real big ones.
Right.
Yeah. And one of our local groups. I don't know if we've talked about them. I think we have the Atheist Coalition of Kansas City. They're a new not-for-profit organization in Kansas City about supporting positive atheism. And Sarah spoke at that, and she basically talked about number one, why she was a proud slut, and number two, why she was a proud atheist. And it went basically into the idea, showing the actually exposing how religion perpetuates this idea of, if you're just a good girl, you won't get raped.
Yeah, and which is very prevalent in Islam right now.
Right.
Yes,
particularly
yes.
Prevalent in Islam right now, where if you do get raped, then you probably deserved it.
Right. You can receive the death penalty in some countries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. Well, if you accuse somebody of rape in certain areas, and then you aren't able to prove it, well, then you're still stuck with the fact that you've admitted to having premarital sex.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But she did a really good job kind of going through, you know, things like the idea of the Madonna and the whore, and how, you know, if you're virtuous and all this stuff, then, you know, none of this bad stuff will happen to you. And how she also works. She's also been a volunteer for 5 years with a sexual assault, rape, like recovery center, and she facilitates therapy groups. And the experiences that she's had with victims of sexual assault, being told things by one girl was told by her mother that if she just prayed hard enough, she wouldn't need any professional help to get over it. A lot of religious people telling women that they can't heal and they can't move on from their sexual assault unless they forgive the rapist. People telling them that, because you like sex too much, you know, you're going to get raped. Cause that was one woman that she had an affair on her husband and then was raped later on. And she actually thought that she caused her own rape, that God was punishing her for, having an affair on her husband. Just these yeah. head trips that they get put on unnecessarily because of religion.
I can tell you that my life is a testament to the fact that last claim is not true.
Yeah.
I have not been raped. But anyway.